From recess, we're with Bob Atchley, the Taney County Planning and Zoning Administrator. Would you like to join Bob up here?
Sure. Bob, is this your pen? I think you left it over here. Didn't you? Good.
The County Commission has asked Mr. Atchley for a presentation regarding 2011 flooding within Taney County. We've asked for the presentation to include information learned through FEMA, SEMA, and any other organizations or agencies that have been or potentially will be involved in the effort to recoup losses from within the flooded areas. I would ask my fellow commissioners to hold our questions, if possible, until the end of Mr. Atchley's comments, at which time we will seek clarification of any points and fully discuss any particular issues that you want to raise, unless, of course, it's something that's real pertinent to the presentation or we're in disagreement with and we need to have cleared up at that particular time. And, Bob, I will turn it over to you for presentation and let you introduce the gentleman that's sitting to your right.
Well, thank you very much. And Jim Lawson has been so kind as to join us today. Jim is the director of Branson's planning department, and he's here primarily to answer any questions that you may have regarding Branson's approach to this scenario or what's being discussed at this point with the city of Branson. I've put together just a brief PowerPoint presentation. I wanted to include some aerial photos of the properties that have been damaged, both those that have received substantial damage and damage that wasn't substantial. But basically, as you know, on approximately May 4th and again on May 24th, there were two separate flooding events in Taney County. And basically, we had homes that were inundated in both flooding events with as much as 14 feet of water. On May 9th, 2011, Taney County was among the counties that received a presidential disaster declaration, and that was disaster number 1980. One thing I might clarify is we've been informed that this disaster declaration included flooding in the state of Missouri, but it also includes the Joplin tornado disaster as well. Therefore, it's going to be a fairly large amount of money that we're looking at here. But following these recent flooding events along Lake Taneycomo, the planning staff completed a thorough inspection of each residential flood damaged property within the unincorporated portion of the county. And basically, we had to determine if each residential home was substantially damaged. And FEMA defines substantial damage as damage to the structure that would either equal or exceed 50% of the market value of the structure before the damage occurred. So basically, on each house, we had to make a determination, was this home substantially damaged? Was it not substantially damaged? We actually did that by utilizing software provided by FEMA. We had to come up essentially with a market value of the house. We had to come up with an approximate dollar value for the damages. And essentially the reason this is very important is in 2004, Taney County adopted a floodplain management ordinance in order for the residents of the county to be eligible for flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program. And when we make these determinations, if a residential structure has been substantially damaged and the structure is located either within the floodplain or the floodway, the structure is required to be brought into compliance with the Taney County Floodplain Management Ordinance prior to occupying. So essentially, for all of these residential structures that have been found to be substantially damaged, if these damages are more than 50% of the 50% or more of the value of each of these structures, they have to be elevated at least 1 foot above the base flood elevation or removed from the floodplain. I wanted to give just some brief numbers at the bottom. So far, we've come up with a total number of residents that were residential structures that were flooded. We had 38 total. Of that 38, nine of those were found initially to be substantially damaged. 29 were found initially to not be substantially damaged. In the county, we took a similar approach to the city of Branson in that we sent out a preliminary letter to each of these residents, basically indicating that our preliminary findings were either that they were substantially damaged or that they were not substantially damaged. Now, one thing I might clarify, too, is the only thing that we conducted this for was residential properties. Because there have been a few commercial properties that have been damaged as well, but the only properties that FEMA requires us to make this assessment on, it is residential properties. Go ahead and flip over to the next one. This, I don't know how well this is going to show, but basically we wanted to kind of show in a more visual format. This is an aerial photo of the properties that are substantially damaged. Initially, the properties that we had that came out substantially damaged were along Foggy River Road. It's a little hard to see, but the majority were clustered right in this area along Foggy River Road. Some of these homes had as much as 14 feet of water in them, so the entire first story would be underwater. 4 foot of the second story would be underwater. There was also an area right in here I'm forgetting the side street here, but these homes were pretty badly damaged. We actually have one garage where the wall of the garage was actually blown out, and a lot of it through here was because of the water velocity. It actually did some structural damage to these. The strange thing is we did actually have substantial damage to this house as well, and I think it's just because of the elevation of the house. I think this one must sit quite a bit lower than these adjoining properties. This gentleman has already indicated that he plans to elevate his house. He's already got an engineer on board. He's indicated to us that basically he's going to put this up on piers or stilts. And so he really hasn't expressed an interest in the buyout at all, but he's really the only one I've got of the substantially damaged folks. The next slide, it shows the substantially and non-substantially damaged properties along Foggy River Road. Pretty much every structure along the roadway had substantial damage. The one thing I will point out is we did have two properties along that roadway. There's actually one here and one right up in here. The reason they were not damaged is they actually were elevated. There are two structures along that street that were elevated. Neither one received damage. The elevating the structures worked in both cases. On the next slide, we'll show we did have some properties that sustained damage along River Point Road and Acacia Club Road as well. These properties were all inundated with water. But initially, in our initial findings, we did not find them substantially damaged. One thing I might bring up just really briefly is this property wasn't actually he has two houses on this piece of property. It's an it's a property that was built upon prior to planning and zoning. He didn't actually get any flood damage to his residence back here, but he's had a considerable amount of bank erosion. It's kind of a separate issue, but I have talked to FEMA about that as well. There is a possibility for applying for funds, and SEMA had recommended that if the county looks at that we actually apply for this separately. But he does have some bank stabilization issues. essentially you step out his side door, and he's maybe got a foot or two left of land, and then it just goes, drops right off into the river and into the lake. I mean, he's just, that's the only property that we really have in the unincorporated county that has the erosion control problems. I've got another slide coming up. This, we did have a couple of properties that received some damage that were along Lakeshore Drive and off of Afton, and most of these, this one actually was elevated, but it still got about 3 or 4 inches above the floor level, just for an example. And
Bob, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can I get you to back up one slide?
Oh, yeah. Let's see.
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay.
The properties were, and I apologize because I'm the one that asked us not to speak, but the property that's down on the lower right-hand side, is the reason that they're talking about a separate application is because it would be a different type of application?
It was my understanding that we could still apply under the same grant program, but she actually indicated that it would be more complicated, and part of that is...
I'm assuming because the building didn't receive any flood damage.
Exactly.
But if there's another flood, it may take the entire building if it washes out additional...
Now,
exactly.
And I'll chime in just because this conversation has happened with the Corps. The Corps says if you can show where the Corps releasing the water caused bank erosion, they have funds, the Corps has funds for banks restabilization that doesn't go through the grant process.
Okay.
So... Jim Sandberg, the core person, had mentioned that in one of our presentations, that if you can directly relate this to the water release, not the massive rainfall we had, the core has money that can restabilize that bank.
Okay, that would be great.
If it's attributed that way.
And it might also hit some of those properties that were along the point, mm-hmm. thinking specifically of
that's what they've said. Now, I don't know. I know that a few homeowners have talked to the Corps, and maybe Jim at the end knows anything more about that. They had mentioned it in the second presentation that there is Corps money for bank stabilization if you can prove that the Corps release caused the erosion versus the massive rainfall.
Okay.
Well, and there's probably no reason that they can't apply for both, right? Would be my assumption.
That would be my thought.
That's what I mean, want to do if it were me.
Right. Exactly. Okay. But I did want to bring that up just because it is kind of an unusual case for us. Most of these, all of these other properties were actually related to floodwaters in the home. This one, it never got in the home, but there's some pretty serious erosion problems. I think I showed you, these were a few structures. Most of these didn't receive a whole lot of water. Basically off of Lakeshore Drive, and we'll go ahead and go on to the next slide here. And we had kind of the same thing off of Lakewood Drive as well. We had a few residential properties that received some flood damage, but none of these were substantially damaged or were initially found to be substantially damaged. And go ahead and... And we had one off of Happy Hollow as well. And I believe they've actually started doing some reconstruction on it. It was not substantially damaged either. Okay. Basically, the main thing we wanted to talk about today was, and I've just put together a PowerPoint presentation based on the information that SEMA's provided to us and that FEMA has provided to us. First off, there's been a lot of confusion about what all this flood buyout program entails. Basically, it's a program where the eligible city or county voluntarily requests and accepts federal grant and assumes responsibility and liability for managing a program that offers its citizens who own houses in a flood-prone area an opportunity to sell their property to the city or county through a voluntary flood buyout program. And the thing they emphasized repeatedly is that it is a voluntary program. It's something that's voluntary to to both the affected property owners, and it is voluntary to either the county or the city. Wanted to go through just some brief things. Whenever there was whenever Taney County was declared whenever we received the presidential disaster declaration, the county and the cities within the county became eligible for the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. And basically, upon becoming eligible for this, basically this is a program where only primary residences are eligible in the state of Missouri. You can't utilize these funds for secondary residences or commercial properties. It basically has to be these folks' primary residence. The other thing is, basically, FEMA provides 75% of the eligible costs for the project, but then 25% of the eligible costs must be provided by non-federal sources. And here in just a second, I've got a slide that basically breaks down what those non-federal sources are. Probably the biggest thing with this as well is it does require a benefit cost analysis. And this benefit cost analysis can be waived for substantially damaged properties. So if the county or the city were to limit the application to substantially damaged properties, a benefit cost analysis really would not be required. However, if the county were to include properties that weren't substantially damaged, my understanding is that basically we would be required to do a benefit cost analysis on the entire grant. So if we applied for 10 properties, we would have to do this benefit cost analysis on the 10 as a group, as a whole, to determine how this benefit cost analysis was going to come out. Some of the what they consider eligible project costs. First off is the fair market value of each property, the way they go about that is basically there's an appraisal made on each property, and then there's even a process whereby the property owner can appeal that appraisal. So initially, what's been talked about is basically possibly the county would hire an appraising company to complete these appraisals, but then there would be an ability for the property owner to protest that. Or other things are the cost of the appraisals, surveys, title searches, and closings. And one of the things I wanted to bring up there that I didn't understand initially was one of the things that's required, this benefit cost analysis, the way it's actually completed is FEMA has essentially a computer program where you have to plug a number of figures into this benefit cost analysis. And one of those figures is the elevation of each of the homes. So we would actually have to come up with the floor elevation for each home, and that elevation would be compared with the base flood elevation at that point. One thing, too, and I don't know if this will end up being an issue or not, but another eligible cost is if there's a property that has a renter, that's a rental property, they actually qualify for what they call tenant relocation assistance, and that can actually be a cost that's eligible as well. The final thing is the costs with this program will actually have to have asbestos identification and abatement, and then the cost of demolition. And we'll move on to the next slide. This benefit cost analysis, and that's one of the key things that would have to happen. If there was a decision made to go ahead and apply for these grant funds, basically the way they look at this is the benefits are future damages that won't occur essentially because the property's been bought out, because the home's been removed. they basically say because acquisition projects permanently eliminate flood risk for purchased properties, their benefits continue far into the future. The benefit cost analysis compares the present day cost of the project and compares that to the long term benefits. And the way they've basically explained it to us is they have to show that for every dollar spent, that they're saving a dollar over a long period of time in flood damages, essentially, is what it boils down to. And go ahead. One of the things that...
Hold on, Bob.
Okay.
The BCA is a critical component to the whole buyout programs.
It really is.
Does that BCA, can that be completed before the application is submitted, or is it part of the application? Because it would save a lot of time, frustration from homeowners if they knew that they even qualified, because that BCA has to have a better than one-to-one ratio, otherwise it's a waste of time and money.
Exactly. I agree completely.
How
in my conversation, and correct me if you've heard otherwise, in my conversations with the representative from FEMA, she had indicated that we could go ahead and complete this benefit cost analysis
prior to the actual application.
Well, the sad part of that is, if it doesn't meet the threshold that we need to meet, then it's going to fall upon the county to eliminate those houses that are
unfortunately, you are correct.
Right.
Unfortunately,
right.
you are.
Well, we're taking you out. I mean, that's really not.
And what she had indicated is exactly what you're saying, that the county would likely have to in some way almost rank these where...
To make sure the BCA is more better than a one-to-one.
Exactly.
So.
And there's a potential, if the county were to apply for both substantially damaged properties and properties found to be not substantially damaged, that could be an actual possibility. There could be a possibility.
We could do the BCA before the application was filed.
Yes. And that way we would know at the front end.
Right. And homeowners would know that it's not a one-to-one. You won't be, just if there's no money, you won't be considered.
Now, my understanding is in order to do this BCA, we would have to have an appraisal at the front end of each.
All the components to it.
But, exactly.
Okay, but I guess what I'm saying is one of the feedbacks I've got from citizens, and we're all getting phone calls, which is the length of process.
Exactly.
Now, what I'm saying is if we knew the BCA was not a one-to-one ratio, they wouldn't have to wait 12 months to say you don't qualify. We would know up front you don't qualify.
You're correct.
Okay.
When you say no up front, that's still going to take a time period to...
Up front meaning it's not going to be 24 months or 12 months. It may be 90 days.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Okay.
And I agree with you completely.
Okay.
And in fact, this FEMA representative, she had indicated that if the county was going to apply for both substantially damaged properties and properties not substantially damaged, that the best approach likely was to go ahead and complete this at the front end before we even apply, just to see where it falls out or where it comes out.
The only reason that the county would consider the non-substantial is if the homeowners themselves wanted to do that, correct?
Yes, which...
Well, no, because if the BCA doesn't get one-to-one, it doesn't matter if they want to put the 25%.
Let me restate it. If we go after substantially damaged, we don't have to do the BCA.
That's correct.
Correct.
It just does not have to be done. However, we have to do the benefits cost analysis if we include even one
non-substantially
damaged.
Correct.
And we've
had
some requests of non-substantial damaged people to be bought out, correct? I know I've had a few phone calls.
The majority, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
The majority of the property owners that are considered not substantially damaged have expressed an interest in the buyout. This is something that Jim Lawson and I had spoken about. That interest is, we've had some folks, it's been somewhat of a moving target trying to get a final number as to how many people are interested. A number of people have expressed an interest, but some folks that have expressed an interest are also looking at other options as to whether to just rebuild.
Sure.
And so it's been kind of an ever-moving target to try to come up with that number.
Thank you. Okay.
What I put together next is, and I just wanted to clarify this, some misinformation has gotten out there to a certain extent. Basically, this non-federal match can come from a variety of sources. Essentially, it just has to be non-federal monies. And so it can be, you know, something that comes from the local government, but it can also be donated funds, whether it came from a civic organization. One thing that's been discussed is the possibility of looking at some fundraisers, to be honest with you. Right. Now, I don't know if that's, you know, going to be feasible or not, but another thing is payment in kind for services. One of the things we've seen in some other communities is there have been, even been communities that have, during this demolition stage, and I'll kind of explain this in more detail in a minute, but there have been some communities that have even utilized some of these homes as, you know, they've allowed the fire department to burn them, basically, mm-hmm. and do a practice burn. And some of those things may even be considered in kind.
The services, I mean, the payment in kind of services, it's basically donated services. If the county wants to donate services to the project or to this whole process, that labor, that burden of an employee, you know, could be applied toward the application.
And I know that's my understanding.
Well, that's what Sheila had said from FEMA and SEMA, that even to a point where, because there's enough number of houses, that a project manager labor,
exactly.
The burden rate could go toward the in-kind.
And I do know, even if it was my understanding, even if the county were to obtain the services of a grants writer, for example, that would be an expense that could be paid out of the grant as well.
Okay.
I don't think we can have our cake and eat it too. I don't think that we can, on the one hand, have reimbursable expenses that we're going to receive back once we've expended them, and or use it as an in-kind expense towards...
I see what you're saying.
I don't think it works both ways.
I think you're...
I'm misreading.
I think that would be correct.
I know they're very specific about that not happening.
Exactly.
That's part of the process.
I mean, the county can look at donating time, which is money.
Right.
And use that as an in-kind, or they can, in fact, utilize time and be reimbursed for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we can do both.
I think you're correct. You're correct. One thing, and I didn't really go into this beforehand, but some of the monies that can be utilized are even increased cost of compliance, and or they've got an acronym for everything, but they refer to it as ICC. What that is all of these property owners that had flood insurance, if they've been substantially damaged, or if they've been repetitively damaged, which a number, even if they haven't been substantially damaged, some of these folks have had repetitive claims, because some of these folks filed a claim in 2008, and then they've had two events this year. They're eligible for this increased cost of compliance, and basically what it is it's an additional $30,000, or up to $30,000 from FEMA, and it's supposed to be used for mitigation measures. So it could be elevating the house, demolishing the house, or relocating the house. What's happened in some communities is the city or county has required the property owners to put that money, that increased cost of compliance money, that has actually been utilized toward the match as well in some cases. And so we should have a number of these folks that are eligible for this increased cost of compliance. It's not, being completely frank, it's likely not going to come close to touching the 25%, but it would be potentially an additional $30,000, even though it is federal money. It's a little strange. I mean, they're receiving this through the National Flood Insurance Program, but they do state that is money that can go toward that 25% match.
Well, that's a real plus, I think.
It is. I mean, that would be a help.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's been indicated is the Community Development Block Grant funds. Even though they come through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, even though they come through HUD, somehow those are considered non-federal by the time they come through the Department of Economic Development. The county could actually apply for Community Development Block Grant funds. Now, one of the things that I've heard, first off, I've heard that at this point there have been no appropriations to the CDBG funds specifically for this disaster event at this point. And what my understanding is that they're basically trying to put together funds from overruns of money from 2008, that there haven't been any new appropriations. There are a certain number of funds there, but at this point not a great deal of money is there, basically, from my understanding. I think it may definitely be worth looking at that, but at this point, like I said, I don't think there are a lot of funds that have been appropriated. I did want to talk just really briefly, and then I thought I've maybe kind of jumped around here a little bit, but there's also a second grant program that's available that's very similar, but it's got a number of differences as well. FEMA has a second grant program called a Repetitive Flood Claims Grant Program, and with that grant program, now the thing I'll warn you about on that one is a competitive grant program, and so people are eligible throughout the entire United States. My understanding is there's $10 million a year in that fund that people are competing for throughout the United States, but the only folks that are eligible for this are basically the eligible properties must be insured first off through the National Flood Insurance Program. So in order to even apply, these folks had to have had NFIP insurance. The second thing is the only properties that are eligible would be people that would be properties or property owners that had repeat flood losses and NFIP claims. Now, one thing that I've been cautioned on this is they've told me we likely have quite a few folks that had flood claims in 2008 and have again had flood claims in 2011, but it's my understanding that they're not eligible until they show up on a federal database, and that this federal database might only repopulate quarterly or something along those lines.
She would say it's quarterly at best. I mean, yeah. It's this mystical database that if it's updated, they may qualify. If it doesn't show up in the database, unfortunately, you can't apply.
Exactly. Now, one of the things that the FEMA representative indicated to me at the last meeting we had was that the county actually could request a copy of that database for Taney County. Now, it's my understanding that information, if we requested that, could not be disclosed. I think it gives personal insurance information, and so the governmental entity could request a copy, but it's my understanding that there is some that there are federal laws that would prohibit us from presenting that to the public, basically. But we could actually come up with that list of people that would qualify right now. And the other thing that's different with this is it actually allows for both commercial and residential properties. Both are eligible. And so the few commercial properties we have could be applied for.
Bob, who is it that applies? Is it the commission or is it you?
This would be the same thing. It would really work the same way.
The county would submit.
Exactly. It would require the county commission to apply.
About the request for the list.
Now that I'm not sure.
I don't think we need to go any further without saying we need to do that ASAP, don't we?
I agree with you.
We what You requesting the list? Or just in
I'm not talking to any of the rest of what we're going to be looking
right.
at, but that list, we need to get it as soon as possible.
Bob,
I agree.
I mean, you could facilitate that with Sheila, because she's the one who said, kept on mentioning the list.
I believe so. I mean, I think a request...
So you could take that action item, like Ron's saying?
That's my understanding, is that I could request the list. She just said it would have to be a representative from the governmental entity.
And you're the flood control manager, so it makes sense for you to request the list.
And the biggest thing that they just kept emphasizing was, I think I even have to sign something stating I will not disclose this information, basically, that it's looked upon as private.
Well, there are a number of areas in county government, sales tax and others,
yeah,
that we have to do that, but I think we need to.
I agree with you.
And one thing you got to remember on this particular grant is the $10 million and the national, all over the United States. I mean,
it's
competitive with people that are on the Mississippi River, the Missouri River, all those things. So you have to, if you apply for it and the name isn't in the database or it comes in next quarter, there's a good possibility that it's a... I hate to say it like this, but it's a waste of time. If you actually try to rely upon a $10 million nationwide repetitive flood grant, because, I mean, as we hear every day in the Missouri River, and they're talking on the news this morning about Jeff City's area flooding and all the...
Exactly.
Stuff.
And it is. I mean, I agree with you completely. The other grant program, and I'll kind of go back to that here in a second. But the other grant program is much less competitive. There's also going to be a larger number of funds available. The way it'll actually work is they've indicated that likely in August or September, they'll have a total dollar amount, and I don't know how the federal government's going to come up with this dollar amount, but they'll have a total dollar amount for not only the flooding but also the Joplin tornado. And then once they have that amount, I believe it's 20% is eligible for this hazard mitigation grant program. And what Sheila has indicated is, due to the amount of flooding that we've had and this tornado, that this will probably be the largest amount of money that Missouri's seen, at least since '93, and possibly ever. We've got the largest number of damages, but they'll also be the largest amount of money available. Also, but you are correct on this repetitive flood claims grant program. It really is iffy whether or not we would actually have a project funded. Now, I will tell you, and of course it was at a different time period when we didn't have all this flooding, Christian County was able to purchase the Riverside Inn through this program. So it is possible, but it is very competitive. They focus on severe, what they define as severe repetitive loss properties. And basically, they say that to qualify as being severe, it has to be four or more insurance claim payments that each exceeded $5,000, with at least two of the payments occurring in a 10-year period, and with the total claims exceeding $20,000. Or the second one, it's going to be two or more flood insurance claim payments that together would exceed the value of the property. So, again, in order to really be looked at as a good possibility, it's we're likely going to have it meet one of those two requirements. I wanted just really quickly to go through. I didn't write this all out in a PowerPoint presentation, but just give you an idea of. If we were to look at this buyout process, first off, what the different steps would be, and then also what the length of time could potentially be, and I want to start by saying that this is a lengthy process. We've really tried to look at other communities that have applied for these funds. It's our understanding that there are some other communities in Missouri that applied for these funds in 2008, and they're still actually waiting for the funds. Some of these have been two or three years before the project's been funded. But basically, the first phase is the decision of the county, essentially, to either apply or not to apply. Now, one of the things they basically say in all of their paperwork that the benefit cost analysis would be completed in phase two, as you know, along with the application. But my feel exactly was like was stated earlier, that it would actually be a better approach to really almost do this benefit cost analysis in phase one, right after a decision's made, before even applying, because then we're going to know, we're going to have a pretty good idea whether or not this grant application can be approved and for how many properties and exactly how that, you know, how that's going to go. They kind of indicate that the application process is usually a 1 to 3 month process is what they're saying. Now, I think part of that is they're looking at trying to get all this information together, completing this benefit cost analysis. From there, basically the way this would work is, again, the county would have to apply on behalf of each of the interested property owners. It's a completely voluntary program, and so the property owners would have the ability to walk away from this at any point. There would be this initial appraisal that was made, and the appraisal would be the fair market value of each house prior to these flooding events this year. Now, it would not be prior to the flooding event that took place in 2008, and so it would be this fair market value prior to this flooding event or these two flooding events. The property owner would even have the ability, if they didn't agree with this initial appraisal, they could pay to have their own appraisal made. It was our understanding that there was a process where then the two appraisals would be sent to an appraiser that basically works for FEMA, and they would make a determination which appraisal was actually correct or possibly split the difference between the two appraisals. From there, at some point, and they're saying over a 6 to 18 month period, basically the county, in our case, and of course the city of Branson, if they looked into it, would actually acquire each of these properties. This grant program would pay each of these property owners fair market value for their property, but it would also pay for the cost of the things we talked about earlier, everything from the appraisal, the eventual demolition of the house. On each of these, we have to go in. We would have to go in and find out if there was any asbestos. There would have to be a lot of times the demolition contractor would be the same folks that would do that mitigation and go in and make sure there's no asbestos in each structure.
Determine the elevation of the property.
And yes, we would have
that equipment. We could do that.
And that's what was indicated.
Yeah, we have that equipment in Road and Bridge. That's a service that we could provide because of Randy and the GPS systems that we do for our roads anyway. So,
and she did indicate that we could do that,
yeah.
That we actually could, if we had the ability to utilize staff that we have to determine those elevations, that we actually could. But at the end of the day, at the end of this program, essentially, each of these properties would be owned by the county. Mm-hmm. There would be about a 4-page deed restriction that would be required to be recorded with each deed. that essentially would limit the property to open space. I mean, it could never have a structure built on it. In my experience with Christian County, one of the things we did ask was if it was going to be used as park-like space, could it have playground equipment, things of that nature. They told us that that wasn't an issue. My understanding is as long as it's not something that meets FEMA's definition of a structure.
Has walls.
Exactly. It would have to have four walls and a roof. As long as it doesn't have four walls and a roof, it could be put on the property, but it wouldn't be insured. So, if you had playground equipment on it, if it was damaged, it's not going to be insured. They're not going to replace it, basically. Really, that's really all I had as far as the PowerPoint presentation.
Bob, I'd like to make a few comments and then a couple of questions and open it up to questions from the commission. And because I want a couple of things within my comments to be clarified, if you catch my meaning. So
yes.
If you disagree with something I'm stating, I want you to make mention of that. But okay. In following what you've stated, if I'm not mistaken, we've learned that there's different options that are going to be available to the flood victims within Taney County,
Yes. Obviously. Yes.
And especially those that are being considered for a buyout.
Yes.
And I think we have a number of people within the county that are interested in the buyout. If I heard you properly, both that have been substantially damaged and those that have been unsubstantially damaged.
That's correct.
So one of the options available for homeowners is the 75% federal and 25% local match buyout program. And quite frankly, this has been the center of a lot of discussion over the past few weeks and is probably the issue that I have received more phone calls than any other issue regarding this flooding event. And I think that is based upon how the federal law is written.
Yes.
And the fact that no homeowner can apply for funding through this program unless they go through the county or the city. And quite simply, no homeowner can directly apply to the federal government for this program.
You're
Therefore,
correct.
The law states the counties or cities must be the agencies that purchase flooded properties through the 75-25% buyout program. So the confusion for many has been the wording that counties and cities will be purchasing flooded properties, because many residents have assumed that county taxpayer dollars and also city taxpayer dollars are going to be utilized for these buyouts rather than for the provision of budgeted county and city services. Now, many have asked if the federal government's providing 75%, where's the local 25% match going to come from? And I think you covered that adequately. There's a number of sources. But in talking with flooded counties from across the state of Missouri, I found predominantly that 25% match has come from the homeowners themselves that have gotten involved. And they've gotten involved because they want to acquire that 75% that will be forthcoming through the federal government.
Exactly.
That's the reason they put the 25% up. So what I've also learned that what many counties and many cities have done in the past, they've created an escrow or escrow accounts so that, in fact, if FEMA wants to see those dollars put up front, if you will, and they want to have that surety that the dollars are there, then they're placed within an escrow account. And that may or may not be the direction we have to go. But that is one direction that's been accepted by FEMA, is if an escrow account is established, FEMA acknowledges that and at the end of the process supplies their 75% for the project costs, which really is an elevated amount, if I followed you, for what the value of the home is, but it includes all these ancillary costs of maybe demolition, of appraisals, of grants application, of a number of things that are going to be involved in the process.
You're exactly correct.
Here's a key for me. I can understand clearly that property owners that are affected cannot apply for these programs unless the county is involved.
Yes.
Or the city is involved. Therefore, they have to use us as a conduit to apply through to receive these funds.
Exactly.
And I don't want to see the county, quite frankly, be the political subdivision that's dragging its feet that will extend or stretch out this process. Believe me, I know that the bureaucratic red tape that's going to be involved in the federal government is going to stretch this out plenty long enough.
Yes.
But I don't want it to be us. And I want you to get that message clearly from me, and I'm confident that these other two gentlemen are going to speak for themselves. But I want us to move as quickly as possible. We have already engaged an individual who's going to be working with you to help you, to assist you in this endeavor.
Great.
And we are looking long range for that to be a reimbursable expense to this county. Now, whether or not we choose to take another route and use that, because I didn't know that until today during your presentation, as an in-kind service, is something that we will have to consider as a team of county commissioners. But this is not a simple process. It's a complicated process.
You're correct.
And we're going to have to find out from each one of those property owners exactly what they want to do, and many of them may want to do multiple things. If it were me and I had the opportunity to make application two or three different ways, I might do that until I hit upon one where I was going to be reimbursed. And I, too, have talked to cities and counties where people have applied in 2008 and still don't have those buyout dollars.
Exactly.
But again, let me tell you, I don't want it to be our fault. So I am going to suggest that we, at the end of the day or at the end of the next session we have, make the decision to make ourselves available as the conduit that's necessary for these flood victims to move through, regardless of how that may be and regardless of where that 25% match may come from, so that, in fact, they can expedite this process locally, ASAP. Now, questions that came from your presentation that I wrote down. Will the county make an application in mass for all the property owners that voluntarily want that to happen, or is it an individual application process for each one? I don't understand that.
Now, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Jim, but my understanding was that it was one application for all of these property owners that are interested. Now, where it could potentially get complicated is if we do this benefit cost analysis and we come out below the 1-to-1 ratio, then there's a potential, as was indicated
taking
earlier,
properties out.
Well, that we might have to take some of these.
Only thing I remember them saying is I thought they had to group them in between substantial and non-substantial loss applicants.
That was my understanding initially, but
I've been told you can put them together.
But then I talked to her again, and she had actually recommended that if the county were going to apply for properties that weren't substantial, that we actually lump them in the same application, because the more substantial folks we put in with the non-substantial, the higher our number's going to be.
Sure.
I mean, it's we're going to have a greater percentage here of success. I mean, we're basically.
Bob, if a property owner commits the 25% local match share, mm-hmm. we go through the process. The federal government awards the 75%. And one of the individuals that's on the application says, I've decided not to go that route.
Yes.
Can that individual back out and not affect all the others that were included in the application?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay.
And it was my understanding that those monies essentially would go back into the larger pool, that the monies would go back. Was that your understanding, mm-hmm. that they would go back into this hazard mitigation grant program? And so if we started
to
out,
be utilized all across the U.S.?
All across the state of Missouri.
State of Missouri,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, for the
for
state
the
of Missouri.
For the money designated here. Okay.
So just for an example, and I'm just throwing out a random number just to keep the math easy, if the initial application had 10 homes, and even two decided we're not interested. Even after the application is approved, they still have the ability to walk away from it. So even a year, year and a half, however long this takes, even at the end, right up until the time that the county and the property owners are signing, it's at the end of this thing, it's essentially a sales contract between the county and these individual property owners. Even up until that last day, they have the ability to walk away, and those monies would just go back into the pot, essentially, for
that's
the
more
state
likely,
of Missouri.
That's more likely to be the property owner that was non-substantially damaged, that may have found, hey, I've got $30,000 now, I can elevate, I can rebuild with insurance. And I apologize, Mr. Lawson. I should have asked, and then we'll come back to questions if that's all right. If you have comments, and I'm curious as to where the city of Branson is at in the process and what, in fact, decisions they have made or have not made or will be making, or could we call on you for some comments?
Sure, thank you, and I appreciate y'all letting me come here and speak to you. We went to a presentation this week, much like what Bob just did with y'all, and the Board of Aldermen are going to meet again next week to get in this more. So there has not been a vote yet. What is being discussed is to look at the substantial damaged homes and to look at the property owners paying the 25%. When we did that, then the presentation I made to the Alderman the other day was we're looking at 7 or 8 homes, and as Bob mentioned, this is a moving target, and I have been working since April the 29th with the property owners, and as you imagine, they went through a tremendous shock when this occurred, and then they're trying to decide what to do, what would be the best option. But when we took out the homes that were not primary residents, that knocked our number down a lot because we have many homes in the Sunset Road, Canal Road area that are not primary homes. And then we've had several folks that have told us point blank we're not interested in a buyout. We're either going to elevate our house, or we have one group that we're working with. They said we want to keep our land. We're going to take the house down. We're going to keep the land. We're going to keep our boat dock. And it's going to be our own kind of a private park that we can come to and do that. So we're down to a smaller number that we think had the potential, and as you work through it, it may even be a smaller number. But we're going. What we have been discussing with the board is a lot like what you're saying, and that the staff at this point have brought them the numbers of who has been substantially damaged, and that we have, and a couple of people from Branson have come and spoke at the meetings that y'all have had that said we are willing to pay the 25%.
As a follow-up to that, will the city be going through an application process to pursue 25% grant money through CDBG also? And a way I look at that is, if in fact on the county level, homeowners put up 25%, we still have an option of asking or pursuing through community development block grant an opportunity to get their 25% back, if I'm not mistaken.
What I have been told since I've been here, and I've been here a couple of years now, is that the city of Branson has never been eligible for block grant money. Now the county, that's probably not the situation, but it has been explored before, and based on the income and based on several things, we are not eligible.
Let me ask this question, because every building that falls within the city of Branson falls within the county. If we do an application for community development block grant to pursue a refunding, if you will, of those 25% amounts that have been put up by property owners, could, in fact, cities houses be included in that? You may not have the answer, but I think it's one I hope you'll get for me.
Yes, and I'll be completely honest, I don't have the answer at this point, but it's definitely something I can research and get back with the commission on.
Danny, have you or Jim heard or considered that?
Well, we did a CDBG block grant for the Boys Camp Road over in Rockaway Beach, which is actually in the city limits.
Right.
So we were successful to get that money. So
okay.
I don't know if this program excludes that option, but we've experienced where the road itself is in the Rockaway Beach city limits. So,
but the difference is it was property that was owned by the county, and that was the
correct
county
the road. Yeah. Well, I don't know if the road was maintained. Yes, the road was maintained by the county.
Right.
I don't know the answer to that, but I mean that's.
I think we ought to take a look at just to give them the option, if in fact it's a possibility.
Right.
It's definitely worth something.
Whether it's Branson or Hollister or any city that.
Right. Exactly. Life. It's definitely worth researching,
right.
For sure. The contact person on this, my understanding is that Andy Papin, I believe, is kind of the contact person. I've left a message with him, but haven't had an opportunity to speak with him yet.
He's a real good guy.
Yeah, the only other thing that I can add, and this is not a definite date, but when we inquired, looked like that the application needs to be in about mid-August. That's what we were told. We were actually given the date of the 17th of August. And so that's not, as you had mentioned, that's not a long time from now. And so we need to get moving. Now, one of the other things that hasn't been discussed today that we had discussed is that at the outset, we were under the understanding that a building had to stay up until the closing till everything was done, and I made the specific request at one of your meetings to the SEMA person, isn't there anything we can do? Can we not get appraisals done and get the work done and then take the building down, because the building is a problem, can be a problem, it's not occupied and it could be a nuisance long term. She indicated to me that she thought that is a possibility. What we have to do is to make sure and get that approved through FEMA that we're going to do this, because she has mentioned several times that happened to someone that actually went out and tore the building down and then applied, and the only thing they got money for was the dirt, the land. Mm-hmm. But it seems like there may be, and that's one of those things we would like to explore, but I can't really, it's difficult for us to keep a building up for years and neighbors, you know, next door that have a raised structure, and you have one that you know, may have mold in it and may be unoccupied. But there are quite a few things like this that I think that we can make work, you know, but it's just a matter of asking and making sure that we have it done right.
Now, did I understand you that you guys are considering substantially damaged homes?
Yes.
As the number that you quoted was 8 or 9?
Yes, sir.
And you haven't made a decision on non-substantially damaged?
There has been no decision made on any of this yet. We have discussed with the board the entire floodplain is eligible as far as it's a buyout. And we have discussed with them that one possibility, though, would be to narrow that down to the substantially damaged. And those are the ones that the people really have a problem. The water went all the way up to their roof and those kind of things. And so what we will be discussing again next week with the Board of Aldermen is that is a definite possibility, and that makes it easier too, because you do not have to justify that 1.0 number. But it seems like that the substantially damaged people are the ones who need the help the most.
How soon is the city going to be meeting again? You said this week. I'd be interested in sitting in on that.
Yes, it's going to be our work session next Thursday at 12:30, and we'd be glad for you to come. And that's it. And I do appreciate y'all let me come here. And I think that's one of the reasons I'm here, so that we're all doing the same type of thing, and we would sure like to coordinate this. And my understanding from the question you asked earlier, we, the city of Branson, even though we're part of Taney County, would be making an application, and then you would be making an application to the county.
Yes. Yeah, I understand this. I understand that. I was just referring to the community development block grant
right.
that might be available through county that's not for the city.
That is correct.
One thing, Ron, that I had a question about was it needs to be understood, and I think that there's, as I attended the meeting the other night in Branson, mm-hmm. People wondered why the county hadn't done this or why the city hadn't pursued in a more hurried fashion. And the facts are, if we don't have any numbers from SEMA on the cost value of these homes and the application cost of applying for such a large, massive amount of money,
mm-hmm.
There's not anything that we can do as the city or the county until those numbers are plugged in. And as I hear you say, I think that's probably the extension of August the 17th.
That's what we were thinking. Yeah.
Because the way I understood it at the meeting, that when the SEMA, the lady that was representing SEMA, she said that they could call upon the numbers and the application anytime they wanted to, and they just hadn't done it yet. So they've set a date now for the 17th for the city. Probably it'll be the same for us. But people need to understand out there that we're moving as fast as we can, but the numbers aren't there yet for the application, whether it be the CDBG grant or any other process that we decide to explore.
Matter of fact, one of the things that we did, the city and the county did also, was we sent out the preliminary notice, and we went, in our case, I went to the tax records and tried to figure out what the value of the house and that kind of stuff. We could have waited until somebody walked in for a building permit. I mean, we weren't required to do that, but we were trying to be more aggressive in helping people because we were getting calls every hour, you know, what am I supposed to do? I don't know what to do. And so we have done as much as we could to move that timeline, but you're absolutely right. I mean, this is not something that you can just do tomorrow afternoon. It's a very involved and a very slow process, and it has to be done correctly in order for it
to receive anything.
Exactly. And I'll kind of echo the same thing. In the county, same type of thing. We knew we had to document as much as possible. And so some of the first photos we have was actually when the water was up. We've actually, in fact, I went out on one occasion, and one of the property owners actually took us out in a boat so we could take photos. We actually went on a boat down the road and took photos from a boat. But same thing. We've tried to get out there as early as possible. One thing I'll clarify, too, from my understanding, I think where this August date comes from is it was my understanding that in August SEMA would have a number from the federal government concerning the total amount of the damages for the state of Missouri.
Well, for the 1980, which is the,
exactly.
the disaster ID number.
And then once they have a determination of that amount, they also have a determination of the grant amount available because it's 20% of that amount, from my understanding.
Right.
And so it's going to be in the multi-millions of dollars, but up until that date, she doesn't have an exact figure as to what's available, basically. I mean, I think she has an idea. She threw a number at me, and she doesn't want me to say it publicly.
Right. I
but...
I'm concerned with what additional damage we're getting ready to incur in the state of Missouri. I talked to the executive director of North Dakota Association of Counties. I think I shared this with you when we met. And he said their dam had just opened up, and this was four days ago. They were releasing 150,000 CFS. You know, at our highest peak, we were releasing 68,000.
Yeah.
150,000, which was hitting the Missouri and headed straight down. And I see this morning that we're starting to flood in St. Joe. And
yeah.
That's going to go all the way across Missouri.
Now, it was really my understanding, and did you basically understand the same thing? It was my understanding that 1980 had been closed.
It's been closed.
And so I think likely
this additional flooding will
likely have its own presidential disaster declaration number.
Event number.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Gentlemen, I kind of in preparation for this meeting, and I'm prepared to make a motion. I just want to, just so you guys know, so we can move forward. We've had obviously more information keeps on coming, but let me take a motion here. It says, I move to authorize Taney County to facilitate with the purchasing department personnel any state or federal grant programs that would provide funds to assist in the purchase of any voluntarily submitted property affected by the floods of 2011, with the caveat that any matching funds that are necessary to complete any application will be provided by the property owner or from any non-federal monies.
Can I see that?
Sure.
It's a rather long motion, and I think we need to look it over, Jim.
What it states, if I'm reading this correctly, that he's authorizing the county to facilitate.
The necessary applications.
To facilitate any state or federal grant programs that would provide funds to assist in the purchase of any voluntarily submitted property affected by the floods of 2011. And with the caveat that we come up with matching funds for any of the incidental costs, basically is what this says, either coming from the property owner or from other local sources, not federal sources.
Correct.
What it says.
Correct.
So my question about this is, I see that the city of Branson has, if I'm not mistaken, went for and have approved, at least thus far, for the application to be substantially damaged properties only. Is that what you said? That's what they're thinking about.
Yes, that's what we're thinking about, and we hope to wrap it up real soon. But substantially damaged is the direction being discussed. But there's been no vote taken.
And what I see that your motion would cover would be substantially damaged properties, non-substantially damaged properties, and any property within Taney County anywhere that was damaged by
the flood.
A flood. Whether it's substantially or non-substantially, or whether it's been looked at or not looked at, I think we need to tighten that up, Joe, personally.
Well, the reason I didn't do that is the property owner still has to come up with 25% of the funds. And that eliminates most everyone who thinks they're going to sell their house because it's been for sale for years and they got a little rain in the basement. You're not going to see that with that.
Just
Because what's going to happen is the people that are nuns...
Let me back up. It says to facilitate the process of going after state or federal grant programs. That's what it says.
Because I didn't want to say the 75-25 buyout program, and I didn't want to say the repetitive loss program or whatever other program may pop up between now and, you know, because we can process them both, so.
I'll tell you what my big concern is. And I'm going to back up and make another comment about this. I believe we need to move forward. And I believe that this authorizes us to move forward and that we can investigate every grant program that's out there. That's basically what this does. It doesn't mean that I'm signing off on any application.
Correct.
This commission has approved any application. We'll have to look at those.
We have to submit those individually.
And then make decisions. But it does authorize us to move forward. That's how I interpret it.
And dedicate some resources to do it.
But my concern is... I don't want to jeopardize those homes that were substantially damaged by having a large number of non-substantially damaged homes on the same application have to do a cost-benefits analysis and that not hit the mark that will allow those who've been substantially damaged to get the 75% federal money. I really think we need to have that conversation.
I personally, my feel is that the key is to do this benefit. It's entirely, you know, the commission's decision as to what the approach will be. But I think if we look at structures that are both substantially damaged and not substantially damaged, that it's essential that we do this benefit cost analysis at the front end before we even apply. Just to see where we're going to fall.
Ron?
Yes, sir?
I think that Taney County, in the situation that it stands with, and the person that we've taken on in a position to look at this very question that we're talking about, have a golden opportunity here, whether spoken or unspoken, to listen to the city of Branson's replies after they decide and come forward with their vote. When they come forward with their vote on substantial and non-substantial homes, there is either going to be repercussion or there's going to be acceptance. And if that be next Thursday, which I understand that's what you said.
Wednesday is when it's going to be discussed.
Next Wednesday when it's going to be discussed. Then that's the reason, Jim, that I haven't seconded your motion is because I would like to see what the repercussions of that meeting is.
Let me interrupt you. I raised the issue, but upon rereading this, and then I'll come back to you. I'm sorry, Jim. This still allows us that latitude. It just sets the process in motion so that the individual that we have committed to bringing on board can, in fact, start looking and doing what needs to be done. I raised an issue that's not there, at least in that verbiage. So I feel comfortable with it where I didn't before. We still have the opportunity to do exactly what you have said and still have the opportunity to define any applications that we move forward with. But this says that we're ready to move forward to pursue any monies and options that are out there. So I created the fear that it's not there.
Let me just say this. I had four or five people come to me at the Branson meeting, and there was not, in those four or five people that walked up to me, every one of them was interested in privately the homeowner themselves taking on this responsibility. With the 75% money and the escrow money put into place. As it was explained in that meeting, they had to understand that they had the asbestos costs, they had the demolition costs, they had all these other things that were going to be put into this. and it wasn't just a 25% of their total value.
Right.
And as that was explained to them, I mean, I seen a different look in their eyes as far as the dollar amount not being what they had anticipated before they came to the meeting. And
Yeah, because it's not just a house, it's a project now.
It's a project. Exactly. It's not an individual house. It's a project. And I think it would be very helpful. I appreciate the motion, Jim. I think that's what all of our concern is, exactly what you have put down there. But I would like to, I think it would be beneficial to the county to attend this meeting Wednesday and see what it does. You gentlemen can second the motion. Right.
I mean, I respectfully disagree with you. The county needs to take a leadership position and not wait on the city of Branson to figure out what we're going to do. We have residents that we have an obligation to. And so the motion is specifically saying we're going to take care of the residents of Taney County, and this is the best way to do it without committing the county to go forward. I mean, without committing to the individual applications, we're authorizing people to get this process started, because right now nothing's happening. We've got residents who need some answers. And to say we're going to wait another week to see what Branson does, I think is not a decision that we need to wait on.
Actually, the difference in what you're talking about is the particulars that need to be in the motion when you move forward. We do need to wait on, or not wait on, but I mean, do need to make determinations. But this doesn't address this. This just says that we're ready to move forward, and we're going to commit to seeking grant dollars and options if they're out there. That's what this motion says. And that's why I changed after I went over and read it,
right,
if it hasn't changed again.
No, I mean, I have there's a sentence if you want me to add it to help your concern. I didn't add that yet, but I could add it.
It says, I move to authorize Taney County to facilitate with the purchasing department personnel, which is where we're putting the individual that we're bringing on. I assume that's why you put that in there.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Any state or federal grant programs that would provide funds to assist in the purchase of any voluntarily submitted property affected by the floods of 2011, with the caveat that any matching funds that are necessary to complete any application would be provided by the property owner or from any non-federal monies.
That means CDBG, if there's money out there.
Yeah, there might be something besides CDBG,
right,
too. It could be a fundraiser, as you mentioned earlier. But
now, this is the caveat. I mean, if you want me to add that to the end of the motion, I can, to modify my motion, because that was your concern about
prioritizing first the substantial damaged properties and then non-substantial damaged, ranked by FEMA BCA benefits cost analysis. I
can add that to the motion if you want me to.
Feel comfortable with it, Dan. It's totally different than actually setting out what we're going to do specifically.
This is we've had lots of phone calls. We've had lots of pleas.
Mm-hmm.
We also have had discussion here this morning about the possibility of teaming up, basically, or assuming that the city of Branson's residents, our county residents, and that they be in this application. There's a lot of questions here for me, not that we aren't, as you wrote, facilitating the resources to make this possible, but the fact that what's going to happen if the non-substantial homeowners in the city of Branson hadn't made that decision, whether they're even going to consider them yet, that's my question. What are we going to do? Are we going to consider the non-substantial and the substantial?
We haven't made that decision yet. All we're doing is saying that we're going to take a look at what funds are available out there and authorize our people to move forward if, in fact, there are funds that we could pursue.
Well, I thought we were already doing that. So
we are, which is why I'm saying that this only strengthens what we've already decided to do.
No, I disagree with that. We've made no formal decision. This is the first formal decision.
What Danny is referring to is we did make a formal decision. We brought somebody on board that's going to be working in this area. So we have taken an initiative, and we have told that individual that we're going to utilize it for those purposes. So I believe we have.
Well, see, I disagree with that.
We didn't do that?
No. He's in the purchasing department.
Well, let me rephrase that. I sat down with him yesterday when we went through the job descriptions, and based upon the session we had, I've already informed Mr. Ashley that he'll be working with him, and that will be his primary job function to start, because we're taking it from, as I thought we chatted about, central purchasing evaluation.
The people don't know we've done anything, and without a motion, they don't know what we've done to move forward.
Okay, I can't argue with that.
So I guess the motion dies then.
Basically, I understand where you're coming from, Jim, on that, because I don't know what you've done either. I wasn't present when you guys made the decision on that. I had left last week, so I don't know what you, when this person was hired. I understand that he was hired with this intent. I mean, that's what I thought was the...
It was our discussion.
Yeah.
This motion just solidifies that, Dan. I feel comfortable with it.
Well, it's just a matter of justifying what we've already done. I'll second your motion then.
Do you want me, Ron, to put this bottom part in there or not?
Do you want the part in there where he's talking about the prioritizing the substantial over? We can do that at any time.
Right. I didn't know if that was a concern.
We haven't done anything other than the motion indicates to Bob and will indicate to the other individual we brought on that we want to move forward and look at what's available out there.
But see, that was my main concern altogether, Ron. And I'm trying to explain this to Jim. Is it the non-substantial homeowner out there? If we decide not to, this gives a false sense of what we're doing. That's the reason I wanted to wait, but that's all right.
We're going to sit down with all of them, and I think it's going to be, and we'll make a decision as to what we're going to do and who we're going to include. But to investigate what funds are available out there, which is what this says, we can do that. And I appreciate your second.
Well,
you have reservations.
Yeah. So.
So take out that option.
I don't think it's necessary.
And it wasn't in the motion, so. Okay.
Motion has been made and seconded. Motion, Jim.
To authorize Taney County to facilitate with the purchasing department personnel any state or federal grant programs that would provide funds to assist in the purchase of any voluntary submitted property affected by the floods of 2011, with the caveat that any matching funds that are necessary to complete any application will be provided by the property owner or from any non-federal monies.
And I think that what this does is it informs the public that we're going to investigate what monies are available to assist.
It'll make them go to the BCA.
So
they can start the BCA process. They can start this whole process. That's a huge undertaking.
All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. We need to have, I think, a work session and so we can develop a plan of action.
I agree with that completely.
And the reason for that is mandated from my perspective, because if we are going to do anything that costs money, we have to make the decisions about spending those dollars. whether it be doing a benefits cost analysis or bringing somebody on board to do that, who that's going to be paid for by, where the funds are going to come from, et cetera. And wherein I full well expect that next Wednesday, if that in fact, or the day
Thursday,
following when they vote,
Thursday.
They're not going to have that decision to make because they're not probably going to address non-substantially damaged properties. I'm correct, right, that you can automatically move forward if the properties only be considered or substantially damaged. There does not have to be a CBA.
Yeah, they indicated that the benefit-cost analysis would be waived if all the properties were substantially damaged. Now, there would still be the cost of the appraisal.
Sure.
And you would still have
the survey and the elevation.
The elevation to come up.
Is the city leaning towards having the property owner provide those?
I don't know that we have discussed that yet, but that will be discussed because as many mentioned, if you get to the closing table and the owner decides they want out, then I don't think that there would be any issue with the county being responsible for 25% because you would just decline that amount for the grant. But any other costs, the survey and all the other information, then because you have signed the application, you are responsible for. So that's a discussion as to does the owner up front put that initial cost in, or does the county or the city take care of that of those costs?
The cost of any of those things that the county is involved in, we're going to be seeking dollars somewhere for those in reimbursable monies, and whether it be through FEMA, SEMA, or through the grants process, the county, the way that I'm looking at this, and the terminology has been used and spoken here this morning, is we're a conduit for which all this money flows to the citizens of our county.
Yes.
And our purpose is to be that conduit and nothing else. When it comes to the only resource that the county has for buyout purposes would be GCR, this commissioner is not interested in pursuing of any of those funds from GCR to buy out this situation. I don't think it's a responsibility of the county to take those tax dollars and do that. So the monies that we are seeking are dollars that would be through the conduit that we are for the monies to come into the county.
Right now, it's my understanding, gentlemen, tell me if you think I'm correct, that when all these incidental expenses are added to each property, that project itself grows in value. The reimbursement that comes from FEMA then is 75% of what that total project is, which includes or can include those very costs that we're looking at. I mean, that's one way to have those costs returned, or so I've been informed.
Now, that's my understanding now, and the only experience I have with this program was with the Riverside Inn.
Right.
And it was my understanding that the amount of money that was talked about or that was awarded included the cost of the property, included the demolition, included, like the asbestos remediation. That was my understanding. The other part of this, too.
Who paid for those things up front?
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
My understanding, and I might be wrong, my understanding is that if we have a piece of property that's appraised for $150,000, that's what the property is appraised for, that 75% will be based on the $150,000. And then any additional costs, whether it's the demolition cost or the appraisal and all that, that's part of the 25% match. But you don't add that cost to the 150. That was my understanding.
That's not my understanding, so that's definitely an answer we're going to have to find.
That's what was explained at the meeting the other night that was at Branson. It's exactly what you just got through saying. And I don't know why it sticks in my mind unless it was somebody that talked to me, but I thought it came through the meeting. You might be able to answer this, Jim. Is that the possibility of the 25% cost when you added demolition cost, asbestos cost, and everything could be a possible another 25% on top of it, which was the term was not 25%, it was a fourth.
I think the 25% could come in cash format, in kind, or a combination of.
But
it was still 25% over.
My understanding is, let's say that you were awarded through your ICC for your insurance, you were awarded $20,000 to tear this house down. They would turn and give that check to you, and that would be part of that conduit money. And so there is some help there because the ICC is through their insurance money. So I guess what I'm saying is that the property owner is not going to be completely out the 25% if they can count some of these other things.
Exactly.
Well, let me back up again then. So let's say a survey is needed, and the property owner pays for a survey. And there are other things that are needed, and the property owner pays for those. Those could be part of the property owner's 25%.
That is correct. Okay.
That's my understanding, too.
They're including that in the 25%.
Yes.
Because I've seen on your list up here, it had title search. That title search is strictly for whenever it's turned over to the county that there's not a loan against that property or a...
It's a clear title.
Exactly.
It's a clear title, no matter what it is. So that those monies that are against that have to be pursued and have to be made clear by the county that those are paid to whoever the loan person is before we could close title on it.
And what's good about that is that means that the owner doesn't have to pay to have all this done, and then they have to write a 25% check for the property above that. That's not my understanding.
It all
helps. And, you know, if you get the demolition paid for through your ICC, because you have to have flood insurance, but if you get that paid for, then that's some of the money that they could turn over to you to help on that match.
Could or shall.
Well,
could or will turn it over.
That's what you have to work out. And you know, there are some details that need to be drawn up between you and the property owner. This is how it's going to work.
And that's one thing I was going to say, too, and I know this is a discussion that we've had. And one thing that came out of the meeting, too, it sounded to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, that possibly, you know, there may have to be some contractual things even between the county and these property owners, was kind of my understanding that there.
I would really suggest that because once you, the county, sign that application, you're on the hook. You know, I mean, it's your application.
Well, let's back up. Rather than be on the hook, we're not on the hook for any monies financially.
Right.
What we'd be on the hook for is the application process itself, and we go through that.
Right.
If, in fact, a property is considered, someone backs up, the county's not going to be out any money.
If you have not upfront the cost for the appraisals and those other things, you're right, yes.
Right.
I think one of the things that they did say, basically in signing the application, you're stating that the funds will be available, but you're exactly correct. You're not necessarily stating that they're going to be county funds. I mean, you're just stating that they are going to be available, and one of the things that I think Sheila Huddleston had talked about is kind of what Mr. Lawson's referring to, maybe the having an actual contract between or some type of contractual.
I can assure you I intend to have more than a contract. If we're going to state that monies are going to be available, they're going to be in an escrow account.
And that's...
And either it's going to be in an escrow account of X amount of dollars that equals 25%, or there's going to be expenditures that have been made that are part of that 25%, and that's going to be accounted for.
Yes.
If they want to move forward and be a part of that list, at least as far as I'm concerned.
I was going to ask, I've never dealt with flood insurance. They have flood insurance other than this FEMA monies. And if they do, they receive those that flood insurance money. And you said sometimes it's $20,000 or $30,000 for
repair.
Up to $30,000. Can they? Do we have access to that, or is it a volunteer deal for them? Or I mean, I don't know how that works. If they're going to use it for their 25%. That is not obligated.
Yes, what you would need to do, and as you just mentioned, you would have an agreement between you and the property owner saying, if you apply for ICC money for demolition, then that's going to be part of your 25% grant.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that the comment I made about being a hook is that the application is coming from Taney County.
That's the terms they used the other night.
But if you have an understanding up front that the property owner will pay for the appraisal and all that, then you're not out any money at all. If you were to up front the asbestos and all the other things, then if they backed out the last minute, you have still paid for that unless you have an agreement with them that they will reimburse you. But I think you're on the right track, and the track is that you want to help people by being the conduit, but you're not going to use any taxpayers' money to pay for it.
We'll make that perfectly clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a good approach.
Exactly.
Bob, do you have anything else?
Nothing I can think of.
Gentlemen, do either of you have any other comments at this time?
I would like to have another work session on this after next Thursday's meeting of the City of Branson.
Okay.
And have it posted for the following week.
Is that meeting daytime or evening?
Yes, it's a study session at 12:30. And
is it one that we might get invited to?
I will contact the mayor. Yes.
Well, we do have BOE.
Oh.
Just want to let you know.
We can't be there.
No.
We can't go.
But it would be. It'd be
We're
nice.
Going to have someone there. So we'll send okay. Bob and let's send Ron.
Bob and Ron, maybe.
Okay.
And shall I notify the mayor though that after the meeting that y'all would like to visit with her or find out what the results were?
Well, I've just been reminded that Board of Equalization starts next Tuesday. We're going to be involved in that every single day.
Well.
And it's looking like it may be nights too, but we would like to have someone present if you would convey that message
Absolutely.
To her.
Absolutely.
And then following that, maybe all of us could sit down in a work session. I think that would be good as well. At least we're going to have a work session
okay.
the following week.
Well, anything, the mayor would be glad to do that. And any way that I could help you, staff, I'd be glad to.
I appreciate that very much. And thank
sure.
you very much for being here today.
Well, thank you.
Sir?
Motion to adjourn?
Second.
Motion's been made and second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously.